Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, lots of talk tonight about the economy, and we have the guy to do so. Adam Davidson is a writer at The New Yorker. He's also the co-founder of Planet Money, and he's the author of the new book, The Passion Economy, New Rules for Thriving in 21st Century. Adam Davidson, a former Chicagoan. Good to see you, buddy.
Great to see you, Justin.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you.
An old friend of yours.
An old friend. I believe I cat-sit a couple times.
You took care of my cat, yeah. Tigger.
Yeah. He's a good cat.
He's a good cat. He's gone.
Yeah, it was a long 20 plus years ago. I assume so.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into this. Well, tell me about the passion economy. Let's get right into it.
So, as you know, much of my career for the last 20 years has been covering really bad things in the economy, the financial crisis, rising inequality, a lot of the pain so many people are feeling in this economy. And over time, I kept coming across these stories that kind of bucked that trend. People who seemed to be doing well, and well in a really specific way. People who were finding ways to do an old-fashioned career, like accounting or farming or marketing, but in a new and exciting and a way that could only happen now.
Yeah.
And at first, it was just kind of a curious oddity to note, but over time, I became a bit obsessed. I collected a bunch of these stories and started consulting a lot of the economists and other experts that I talked to regularly. And I came to realize that this is the same thing as the bad news, that these are flip sides of the same story, that we are in the midst of a massive transformation in the fundamental logic of our economy. 20th century was all about mass production. For most people, that meant being the same, being a good worker and an employee.
Yeah, uniformity, right.
Uniformity.
Right.
And now, for a whole host of reasons, that is flipped on its head. And that the very forces that ripped apart the 20th century economy, global trade, computer automation, robots, that outsourcing, are making a new way of life possible. They're hurting some people, but they're really creating this new way of life. And it's not a way of life that's only available to the very elite, to the, 1%.
Almost the exact opposite. Stories you tell in the book, the exact opposite.
It's the exact opposite. And I made a point. I wanted people who, these weren't once in a generation geniuses. They weren't people born rich who went to Harvard and Stanford. These were like regular folks who just figured a few things out. And so in the book, I tell a bunch of stories about these regular people, but then also try to reveal that each of them actually has figured out something profound about how the economy works these days that we all should learn from.
It's amazing, too, because you mentioned in the book that there's not a lot of study about what makes small business work and what makes it fail. And it's surprising to me that there's not more research or that economists are not focusing more on the small business. There are going to be big trends, other kind of things. Does that surprise you?
It really surprised me. I mean, when I started working on this project, I had all these like small business people who seemed to be doing well in an interesting way. And at first I was just like, oh, I'm going to go find out all those books that all those economists and business school professors have written about small business. Yeah. And I'm call around and call around. And basically it doesn't exist. That first of all, much of the work of economics is just big, broad views of abstract units of human beings, but not real people. Right. And business schools tend to be much more focused on often either high growth, venture capital backed, the sort of you become a billionaire, you go broke kind of business,
or the Apple story, right?
The Apple story or the Google story, right. Or finance, becoming a investment banker, something like that, or becoming a manager. Very 20th century ways of succeeding. And there's very few, although I do profile one of the few business school professors who really just ask this fundamental question, which to me is the only question they should be asking, which is, for just a regular person in America, what should they do to have a comfortable, reasonable life without a lot of fear and risk economically? It seems like a reasonable question,
right?
That at least a few of them should be looking at.
Well, far too often economists and people who cover the economy, they do it in broad strokes. So the premise of the book, really, you're looking at how everyone's talking about the death of the middle class. Everyone's talking about robots are going to take your jobs. All the kind of stuff we hear nonstop in the media and our listeners hear all the time. Rarely do we hear stories of the stories that are in your book, these creative solutions, the way that people are figuring out places that, they saw that their kid's chocolate bar wasn't, or you know, they needed a different chocolate bar for their kid, whatever it might be. Why don't we hear those stories? Why, this seems like a positive story for our economy, yet I don't think anyone's ever focusing on it.
I think you're right. I think we're in a time where the story is a dark story. And there is a positive super elite story. You know, the stock market is at record highs, but, you know, we know that the vast majority of stocks are owned by the very, very richest 5 or 10% of Americans. There is low unemployment, which is good, but wages have not gone up particularly. So there is this kind of big macroeconomic story that's fairly positive. We are in a long growth period, but we're not, I don't think anyone would argue, we're in a period of huge confidence and optimism about the future. And generally, and this is actually one thing economists are good at studying, generally people wildly overestimate the good times and they wildly overestimate the negative times. So part of what led to the financial crisis was that the period between 1982 and 2007 was a period of robust growth, just a few relatively short recessions, and the feeling like, hey, it's just all smooth sailing. We figured it all out. We're just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And people weren't asking the difficult questions that, if they had, would have forced them to reckon with both rising inequality and the subprime housing bubble, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a safe bet that if the general mood is overly dark, that's probably an exaggeration too in the other direction.
Right.
That, you know, certainly during the Depression, nobody was thinking, oh, the 1940s and 50s and 60s are going to be the greatest period of growth in all of human history. You know, that would have been inconceivable. I also think it's even more so because it's not just the tone, it's that the basic rules, the basic logic have changed. It's like on the level, I've been thinking a lot about farmers, say in 1900, when America was still largely agrarian, watching their kids go off to the city, working in factories, and they're looking around, everybody's a farmer. All of human history, or at least all of, you know, 10,000 years of farming history, almost all human beings have been farmers. What are these kids going to do in the city? It only seems dark and ugly and like the death of something special. And it did take a generation or two for people to kind of understand, no, this is this new thing that's different from farming, but has a lot of benefits too. So I think we're a little bit early. I will say it's a weird week to be launching an optimistic book about the economy when there's an impeachment going on.
Yeah, and, sure.
Yeah.
Adam Davidson is here. He is the author of The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. We'll take a quick break. Come back. Adam Davidson here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back. 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with you. Adam Davidson is here. He's the co-founder of Planet Money, the great podcast and website. Also the author of The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. You have really made your name on being able to talk about the economy to real people. This is where Planet Money has won awards for this. I mean, you won the best awards that they give out. It's been you've got them. Where does that come from? Where did you get into the idea of talking about the economy, talking about finance, talking about small businesses, and doing it in a way that is not like everybody else?
Well, I want to make this a little personal. First of all, I just want to point out to your listeners, I don't think you've won any of those awards.
No, none of them.
Okay.
I lived in the same building as you 25 years ago, so yeah. I feel like I kind of won some of those awards.
No, I wouldn't put it that way.
I feel like I was there for the early parts of your life.
I don't think you had an effect. No.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But actually, I mean, what's interesting talking to you, because we were good friends in the mid-90s, and I don't think I ever talked about economics. It wasn't on my mind. It wasn't something I was thinking about. And it really wasn't, weirdly enough, until for Marketplace Radio, I went to cover the Iraq War. And oddly, you're covering a war that we're all told is essentially a religious battle. And I learned, it's all about economics, that so much of the meat of the fight between Sunni and Shia, between Iran and Iraq, between Israel, and is about basic questions of, can my kids succeed? How do I make money? How does this country work? And I really fell in love with economics. I had been a kind of general services reporter, producer, you know, working with you at WBEZ, working at the Trib, working at This American Life. And I like telling that story because I eventually really developed what seems to be, I mean, it's now been a while, what may become a lifelong passion in being a storyteller about economics. And as I like to joke, there's lots of people know economics better than me. There's lots and lots of people who are better storytellers than me, but it's a nice Venn diagram. Well, like,
it's amazing to think about, because you never think of someone who reports on economics or reports on the economy to be a good storyteller.
That's the trick.
That's the trick, right? It's all tickers, and it's all, I got to tell you what the numbers were today, and I'm going to talk in this business jargon. So just like your book, The Passion Economy, you found a niche that people obviously desperately wanted.
And I think tellingly, it's a niche that I didn't have to be the best. I don't have to be a genius. I don't have to, like, I've created economics or something. It's just, I think so many of us have like a two or three unlikely combinations of interests that overlap. And I mean, you've always been, deeply obsessed with sports. Mm-hmm. You really love news, Chicago news, and you also really love comedy and have studied comedy. And that's right. A guy like that maybe should be a radio host. And
we'll see. Jury's still out on that.
Yeah, the jury's still out on that. Right. But I think finding your passion, I mean, one thing I worry about when talking about this is, do people think, oh, I don't have a passion, so this doesn't apply to me? I think it takes a long time. Very few people are like fully formed at 15 or 20 with like, oh, my passion is this. It takes a while. And it's an investment that's worth investing in. And when I look back at, I mean, you and I both in our 20s did a lot of different things. We both were very curious and kind of, we were on mic, off mic, doing a million different things. And I think that kind of exploration helped both of us figure out who we were and who we were as different from others, which is not to say that we're better than others in some huge way. It's just, oh, here are the areas that
we're unique.
Makes me unique. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you talk about that in the book too, because you right at the beginning, you kind of set out, here are the things you need to know about yourself, or what you really need to know if you want to get into this, what kind of person you are, who's your customer, those kind of things. And then you go and launch into telling other people's stories. For you, I'm always blown away by the fact that it almost feels like people who report on the economy or economics, they speak in a language that's coded. They speak in a language that's not for me. Then every time I'm like, I think that's good. I mean, is that they said it's good? It's good then. And I wonder. I keep seeing this over and over. Politicians have adopted this. Both sides use it all the time. That it's almost the language that's not for us. It's not for the layman who's just reading the newspaper or reading a certain website to understand what's happening with money in this country.
Yeah, and that is obviously an obsession of mine. I mean, I find it horrible. It's boring, but it's also it's weaponized boredom. And part of it is deliberate. I mean, part of it is that there are specialists in economics, finance. These are complicated things, and all specialties, like all medical specialties or engineering or whatever you think of, need technical language. But that really should not override all the discourse. Wall Street does deliberately make things opaque. One of the main purposes of Wall Street and investment firms and finance companies in general is to create what they claim are unique products that so that they can charge a premium. And they want to make it seem like, oh, this is a mysterious, magical thing that nobody can understand. So there's an actual financial benefit to obscuring. But to me, the financial crisis should have ended this whole thing.
Right.
Like, everybody who talked on news like, well, the Dow Jones went up by 3% today because of that. Everyone was wrong. Everyone was fully wrong about the fundamental nature of our economy. So, like, that's a moment for, like, absurdism. Like, to be like, well, the Dow Jones today forced us to realize that we literally have wasted our entire career on a bunch of nonsense and know nothing about how. So, to me, it's actually a reflection of the passion economy itself, that the mass production economy of the 20th century, people had specific functions. Those functions added up to most people having, they would get raises, they'd get promotions, they'd do well over the course of their life. They didn't have to take much mastery over the broader conditions of their economic life. So they didn't really need to know that much about the economy.
Right. They knew they needed to get their paycheck and put food on the table for their family.
Exactly. Right. And there were a handful of ways of doing it, most of them involving get a job and get paid for the job and then try and get a promotion. So now I think we are actually going back to the way most people have lived for all of human history, which is you have to hustle. The world is a world of hustling. Most people who've ever lived had to hustle for their daily bread by farming, by trading, by figuring out some way to make a buck. And I think there's a lot of tools now that no one else had in the past, helpful, great tools, but we do all need to take a bit more responsibility. That doesn't mean everyone needs to be a small business owner or an entrepreneur. This can happen in a company, but you need to take more responsibility for understanding the logic of the economy overall and the place you work, the way you make money. How are you adding value in the economy? How do you capture that value correctly? I think that's part of the change we're going through. And it's tricky. I mean,
people can understand that, though. They can understand hustle. You're broadcasting to Chicago right now.
It's
all about the hustle. They get that. The thing, they wonder if the rules are stacked against them. That if they're going to hustle and they're going to do things, that there's always going to be a top level 5-10%, like you're talking about, the rich, the elite, whoever, who are going to change the rules and take the rug from underneath them. That's, I think, the worry as people get more attached to the economy they want to live in.
Yes. I mean,
what happened in 2008.
Yeah, I would look at it in a few different ways. First of all, the rules are stacked against you. And actually, a lot of the newer economic research reveals that the rules were kind of even more stacked against than people realized all along. And that's a real issue. And that's ultimately, I think, a political issue. But there are ways of thriving now. Unfortunately or fortunately, they don't involve all that much looking backwards. So the kind of, we just need to go either, you know, the left-wing version of we need to have a really high minimum wage, we need to have much stronger unions, etc. Those may be good things in and of themselves, but they're not going to solve the problem. Or the right-wing version, we need more coal and less trade, and that's not certainly not, if anything, we need the opposite of both those things. So the looking backwards to me is just the wrong move. It's like in 1920 saying, we need to farm more sorghum or something. Like, no, that's not the solution.
That's not the solution.
So there has to be a looking forward. I do think the bad news for many, good news for some, is life is, I would expect, permanently less certain than the 20th century. The 20th century really was a blip in the human experience. Most life throughout history has been very uncertain, tied to the weather, tied to political forces beyond your control. The 20th century provided, at least in a handful of rich countries, a kind of stability broad-based stability that's just unprecedented. I think that's gone for good. I think so. I don't think we're switching from that to this new thing, and then nobody has to think about it for 100 years. But this new thing will develop its own logic that people will come to understand. They will understand how to, but it will involve that hustle. It'll involve paying, all right, what am I doing that's valuable? Who are the people out there who think it's valuable? And how do I get the money from them to me? and that, even if you're a schmuck with a job in the marketing department of a bank, you still should be thinking that way, because that's how you're going to articulate your value to your boss. That's how you're going to look for other opportunities in other companies or other industries. And that wasn't necessary. The marketing department of a bank in 1960, or the accounting department.
You didn't need to have that skill.
You didn't even think about it. It was irrelevant.
It's great to see you, man.
It's always great to see you.
Adam Davidson, the book is called The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. Adam, creating such a career, award-winning career, co-award-winning with me.
I do want to just let your listener know that you often claim credit for awards that you literally had nothing to do
with. Well, I mean, I did, in the sense that I was there, and I think I helped form who you were going to be.
Here's what I'll say. No joke, you and I had a lot of fun that eventually led to us being who we are today,
there
without question.
All right, see? There should be a little asterisk.
And I overcame that and won awards.
The book, The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. Adam, great to have you, man.
Thanks. Great to be here.